Well, good morning.
Good morning.
This is what's left of Mike Lorenz today, so I got a good night's rest, and that was important to me. I guess we're going to start saying a few things about 3 and 4, are we?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, number one, and you're free to disagree with me, but I'm not nearly as excited about step 3 as most people are. And that's just because of my training here. Step 3 for me, to put it, to shorten it up, is kind of a, I'm going on a Tinder date with God. I say, you know, I'll check you out, I'll try you out, but if you read that, there's not really much commitment there. There's some hopefulness and some enthusiasm and everything else. But what we're going to be doing here, we're going to be moving from where I express a possible desire to have enter into a relationship with God through just my vision. God says, okay, well, before you do that, I want to know a little bit about you, and I want you, more important, I want you to know a little bit about yourself. Just if you're going to turn your will and your life over to me, just what the hell are you turning over? You know, this is not like some, you know, trash dump along the road where you flip your Burger King cup out the window. You know, say, okay, it's been a terrible life, I've been a real jerk. Boom, you take it. No. See, that's the way I've done things all my life. I'd go dig myself a hole, and then I'd want somebody else to bail me out. Mom, dad, whomever. And this is a turning point here. So it's important. You're free to say the third step prayer every day if you want to, but as was Don Pritz pointed out to me, he says the prayer of real surrender is the seventh step prayer. The seventh step prayer, as Don put it, is the third step prayer with teeth in it. Now I'm making a commitment. And if you sit and compare the two prayers, one's more aspirational, the other's a prayer center, of surrender. And just my view of it, I mean, I don't stop anybody from saying the third step prayer if it makes you happy. But it's, as Clint Hodges says, it's kind of like redoing my marriage vows every day. Really? Would you do that? See, here's my creator, I'm now willing, you should have all of me, the good and the bad. See, that sounds like I'm not going to play God anymore, right? I'm not going to decide what's good, Mike, and what's bad, Mike. I'm saying, here, I give it to you to decide. And on and on and on. So just something to consider. We're going to move through this so we get to a place where we can honestly say that seventh step prayer and mean it. And when I get there, when I find myself in a problem as I go along or in a series of things, it's usually because I haven't kept that seventh step commitment. It's not that I quit believing in God or something else. I just said, you know, I said I was turning my will and my life over to the care of God, my creator, you can have all of me. What would all mean? And I didn't keep my word on that. You know, the business world I live in, if you don't keep your word, you got a problem. At very least, the people you do business with won't take your word anymore. They're not the relationship changes. And more importantly, when I'm doing that, in my head the relationship changes. So kind of put that out there as an overview. I want to talk a little bit about old ideas. I've sure got them. I always liked the way Howard Poland's put them. They were like a herd of baby elephants he had. And my baby elephant, here's one right now, right here. That's an old idea. That I had a story that I'd go out to talk or something in California, and I'd say, well, this is nice, but you know, I really don't care for California, and I don't care for the people here either. Have a nice day. And if that sometimes it's either a conversation starter or ender. Well, why would you say that? Well, you know, I'm a Vietnam guy, and when I came back from Vietnam, I came to Oakland Army Terminal and mustered out, and they gave me a ticket and sent me over to San Francisco International Airport. And they were mean to me, and they yelled at me and screamed at me and spit on me and all that kind of stuff. Well, I honest to God believed that. Now, here's what happened. A couple years ago, I got a call from my sister, and she says, you got a bunch of mom's pictures and stuff. Would you look in one shoebox and see if you can find these pictures from this family gathering? So I said, okay. So I'm going through the shoebox. I come across this. Kind of cute, sort of familiar, but I really don't know who she is. And I turn the thing over. And it says, to Mike with love from Kathy. So apparently I knew her. And then there's the date on there, April 24th, 1969. Well, I remember that because that's the day I got out of the Army. And all of a sudden, boom, the lie blows up and the truth comes in. What actually happened was I got back in. I got out of the Army, gave my discharge papers and my ticket. I headed over to San Francisco International. I walked in the bar, and I ran into Kathy. And Kathy adopted me and took me home to her apartment. For 3 days. And you know, here's the deal. I'm the oldest son, and I've been in a combat zone for a little over a year and all that kind of stuff, and been shot a couple times. So my mother has really got a thing on that I need to get home. So she isn't going to buy some story that I got to go with Kathy. I construct a whole series of lies to justify me having a 3-day delay on the way home from Vietnam. And then I told that lie so many times around the family that it just became embedded, and it was the truth. I really thought that was the truth. And, you know, if I hadn't flipped that open, I'd still believe it was the truth. Sit here and tell you with no qualms about that. Now, how many things do you think I would have? And in a life the length of mine that would be like that. Things that I believe are absolutely true. And I'm going to do retreats up in Malibu, for God's sakes, but it's California. I'm not going to like it. You know, stupid stuff. Stupid stuff. And I'm cheating myself. One of the ways I really connected with Sandy Beach is when Sandy said, you know, if you listen to some of the old talks on tape, you'll find that I had a completely different childhood than I had today. And that's true. I believed I was kind of always in some kind of conflict with my father, and I had all kinds of justifications for that. The fact I found later is the poor guy was an untreated Al-Anon. My dad was the football player, and my mother was kind of the cheerleader sorority girl, and she didn't mind partying a little bit. But Dad, and come to find out after he's dead, that when my dad was 15, in the middle of the Depression, his grandmother dies. And they sent, my dad was the middle brother, he got sent to live with Grandpa, who was apparently a raging alcoholic, and as a 15-year-old, his job is to control and supervise his grandfather while he's drinking. And wow, no wonder he reacted that way. And things like that change that. Here's the actual thing. This is another thing I found. This, believe it or not, was the Minneapolis airport with a propeller plane and all that. And let's see, this was 1955, and the father that didn't like me was out of town on business a couple days and took the time to, he didn't make a phone call, he wrote a postcard out. Says, "Dear Mike, sure do miss you, big boy. It's real cold up here. Hope you're helping your mother, blah, blah, blah. And can't wait to see you. Love, Dad." That's the guy that I believe didn't really care that much and disapproved of me. So we get a chance here in this thing. It doesn't necessarily happen the same way every time, but we almost always in some ways find out that we had a somewhat different life than we believed we had. And often it's a much better life than what we had. Because if you're feeling guilty, you interpret what other people do differently than if you expect that, hey, maybe I should be loved and cared for. Otherwise, I'm suspicious about it. So, thought there. I'm not gonna, here we go.
Oh, yes.
Well, maybe. That wasn't exactly the one I was looking for. Oh, yeah. Well, gosh, I forgot I hated him that much, but. Oh, look at that.
Oh, look at that.
Well, yes, well, see, that's, somebody's going to come along and organize my filing system here. Go ahead and start. I'll find what I need here.
Okay. You're going to have a hard time shutting me down.
That would be God's will.
That's right. I've been known to fight that will a little bit. When you find your mic, tell me and I'll just pass it back to you. Katie Parker, alcoholic. You know, it's interesting. Like I said, this is such an honor and a privilege to be able to do this with Lorenz. Let me show them that picture. Remember I told you guys my husband's the camp coordinator. And I hope you have a camp coordinator in your life because they make stuff happen. And Tarek's a camp coordinator. And they really do make stuff happen. So you got to remember when you're asking them for favors and can you do this and stretch this, they really want to knock you in the head because they've organized everything. But Charlie has, there's a conference called Man to Man, and it's in Brownwood, Texas, and it's a men's conference. They're still trying to figure out how to dress me up like a man and sneak me in, but we're having a little trouble with the mustache. But the... So we have all these guys come in from all over the United States, and they spend the night at our house. One time we had 22 men asleep. Charlie gets blow-up beds. And, I mean, these guys are not young. Some are young, but, you know, we're 55 years old on a blow-up bed. Lorenz got the extra room, him and Bazan's. But this is a picture of us across the street, and we do it every year. And it was so funny because there was two women walking.
Also, where the China berries are.
Oh, we are not talking about the China berries. Oh, my God. Mike, I'd like for you to talk about Charlie and the China berries, okay? But these two women were walking. Our neighborhood's a big, wide street. A lot of people. It's a hike and bike type trail feel. And these two women go, "What is this?" And I said, "Oh, this is a reunion every year. I invite all my ex-boyfriends." She's like, "Oh, it's a blast." So I got that picture for all of it. It was so fun. You know, I do see the third step as a big deal. And I see it as a big deal because it changed my life. My sponsor woke me up to this. This was not from Mark Houston, although Mark Houston had plenty to do with the third step. This was from my sponsor, Marty Ruby. And one of the things that... I was unaware of, as I heard Jeff out of South Dakota say that the third and fourth step go together more. And I had never heard that. And once again, remember, and when it comes to education, I just don't really dig it that much. We met the historian that teaches here. He's the history teacher. Super nice guy. But, oh, my God, he goes, "Yeah, I teach history here." And I thought, I mean, I just am not interested. And but I can fake it well. Super nice guy. And it was really fascinating. He talked about the whole history of the school. And when we walked away, Charlie actually listened. And he goes, "You know, that's the quarry over there. And this is the this over here. And this is the that over here." And all I saw was the cute dog he was walking. And but the third step to me, I like to look at it as the second surrender. Bill talks about emotional sobriety. You can call it whatever you want. You can visualize it whatever you want to visualize it as. But it absolutely revolutionized my understanding of what the root of my problem was. And I think sometimes we rush people. The new guy nods his head that he understands what the third step is, and he doesn't. I don't think you wake up to the third step. Honestly, now this may, you know, upset some people, but I really don't think you wake up to the third step till about 10 years sober. Understanding what selfish and self-centeredness looks like in you, because it's always going to be talking about behind a kind motive. See, we bring the new guy in, we teach him integrity, dignity, honor, respect, show up, your word is your word, start the coffee, do what you need to do, and this guy comes in, you know, just, wow, they really trust me, they gave me the keys to the place, and he's doing all the stuff, and in about 18 months, he's looking around, he's pissed off because he's the only one doing it, you know, and he's like, you know, Bob's over there hitting on the chicks, and I'm over here setting up the tables and chairs, and see, he doesn't realize that it's turned on him. Because he didn't, you know, it was an honor and a privilege until it wasn't an honor and a privilege. And that's the way the deal works. But we are not bad people. We are just so deeply self-centered. I mean, wow. It's my DNA. It's everything in the world. Sieve. It's like a sieve. It just goes through me, right? It says, the world and its people really do dominate us. In that state, the wrongdoings of others, fancy to real, has the power to kill. Just the world and its people. Other than that, just go have a good day. I mean, we are talking about everything. And if and when you do wake up to seeing all these puzzle pieces get put together, and don't be hard on yourself. If you still don't get it and you start and stop, that's a part of the process. You know, you don't go to one of these weekends and then you nail it for the rest of your life. Oh my, you should have been in our room last night. We were not nailing it, okay? because it's challenging. It says in the 12 and 12 that we are incapable of forming a true partnership with another human being. Another butt pucker. You're like, what? I mean, there's no wiggle room in what they say. And then yet people go, well, I'm really not like that. I'm like, if you be alcoholic, you are. It just shows up different for you. So did you find it, Mike?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Go, take it back, and then I'll come in.
Well, we wouldn't want you to feel terrible here.
Thank you.
Yes. Now, I will give a mild dissent to this idea that we're good people that are, you know, just misunderstood by the world. The fact that I grew up in a college town, the university labs at that time, that was in ancient times, but the university labs would pay $2 for a live cat. When my drinking budget needed supplementing, cats disappeared all over town.
That is a bad person.
Some of those little old ladies where Fluffy disappeared would not say I was, well, he was just a little misguided. The pitchforks would be out. See, that's without divine intervention, I'm in pretty deep shape, bad shape here. So anyway, this was going to be just a little example of some inventory that was kind of life-changing for me. The backstory on this was that first marriage I was talking about came to an end, and I was in dire straits. I was celebrated my 7th birthday living in a sleeping bag on the floor of the den of one of my friends, and my fancy car had gone away, and I was driving a 1989 four-cylinder Ford Taurus. It was a real clunker, and So eventually, things start to straighten out, and I find her again, and what happened was just on the cusp of wonderful things happening here, her company transferred her to another state. And so anyway, I'm upset, and my sponsor directs me, they say, you might want to put some of this on paper. So the person I was really upset with was God, because look what God was doing to me. It was interesting because I wrote on top of here, God, please help me. I resent God. Well, why do I resent God? Well, I don't have the relationship that I'm going to have with a woman. I think that God will only give me the choice between having a sick relationship or no relationship. I'm lonely. People with less recovery, like my damn sponsees, are having better relationships than I'm having. I'm afraid that God will keep me in this pain because I'll be more useful and do more 12-step work than if I had the relationship I fantasized. Oh, this is the self-pity just... I feel like God has given me a gift of communicating with others, and the price of the gift is my own happiness. I'm mad because I know that only God can help me, and I don't believe he will. See, that's I just wrote my own death sentence here. Yeah. What's it affect? Well, it affects my self-esteem, of course. I feel like I'd sell out my principles for a comfortable relationship. For example, I might do something like hitting on a newcomer. As a result, I feel like a phony. Don says, Mike, that's because you're a phony. Yes. But just wait, I'm a problem solver here. It's distorting my sex relationship. I am having an increasingly emotionally unsatisfying sex-only relationship. Look, the problems were just this. I just needed to figure it out, and so I ran into the right girl, and she and I came to an agreement that what we were going to do is we're no cards, no flowers, no movies, no dinners, no nothing, that we would just get together and have a good time, period. And we had a code. If I called her secretary, I would say, is Julie there? And is she available? Does she have time in her schedule for some racquetball? Racquetball was the code word. So, yeah. Yes. Well, you know, here's the thing. Well, anyway. You can't really explain that away, can you? Yes. I knew my wife loved me when she dated me after hearing this. Affects my personal relationships, keeps me jealous, comparing myself to others, coveting what I think they have. I'm unwilling to share my pain. I feel ashamed, flawed apart from indifferent. My unbalanced drive in this area makes me vulnerable to getting drunk. Compromising my principles will get me drunk, and I know I don't have the strength not to do this. Yeah. And the part was that I got to find out, and Don pointed out, he says, thank God none of what you tried worked for you. If you were able to use another human being in that way, you'd be in serious spiritual trouble. The fact that you couldn't successfully do your dream sex-only relationship, then that means there's some hope for you, and we can work with you. And I didn't know these things, you know. I'm still at this point writing my part here, and Katie will tell you about that. But my mistake here, I'm not willing to give this to God because I don't think he's interested or willing to help me. All you got to think is, what's God care about my sex life, my dating life, all this kind of stuff? Yeah. I'm completely willing to sell out for relief. I'm impatient. I'm not willing to take an honest look at what this. I'm pretending that this the right relationship's going to fix everything. It'll all be perfect. And I want somebody else to fill me up and make me feel safe and secure. Oh my God, I can't do that. And so I come from a tradition where we do multiple fifth steps. So I write this out and I call Gary Brown in my home group and, you know, and Cowboy Gary says, ho, 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 ho. Even though he saved my life, I'm not all that warm to him yet. And then, I called Pritz and laid this out with Pritz, and I already gave you some of his comments as we went along. He says, Mike, I think you're a man with who's fundamentally got a good core into him. So this is what I want you to do. And I'm waiting for the magic thing that's going to fix all this, you know, or maybe, hey, I know a girl in and you know, I want you to start saying this prayer and this prayer only. Just this. God, please teach me about love. Like, what? Is that all? He says, Mike, you're a guy who knows a lot about sex, but you know nothing about love. And I started saying that prayer in 1992. I said say it today because I always need to expand and maintain the capacity for love. And I had a strange, as a result of an amend I made, ended up with a workshop of just about a dozen women. And the way that had occurred, I can't leave it out, can I? When I was approximately not quite 2 years sober, I had an adventure in Alcoholics Anonymous. I got fired by my second sponsor. And the reason was that I was dating a married woman in the program, sponsoring her 16-year-old son, and I was playing euchre on the weekends with her husband, who was a gun-toting federal agent. I always tried to convince Don that there was a statute of limitations on this and that it could leave my story anytime. He said, no, you need to keep telling that in your story because there are going to be other people doing stupid stuff like that. And they need to know you don't have to get either shot or drunk, you know, but you do need to change your behavior. And so this is some of the background for this. Later, I needed to make amends to that gal, and she'd been divorced, not a result of what we'd done. But she said, gee, something's going on with you that's not going on with me. And I told her about the step work and all that stuff. And she said, when it got down to the event, she said, well, how about I sponsor bunch of these girls? Would you take us through this book? And so I said, let me check. I was sure Don had said, no. And he says, well, do you have any sexual interest in anybody there in this group now? I said, no. And so he says, then I think I can do it. If you have a problem, let me know. And I had a revolutionary experience. See, it's kind of like us guys are PCs and they're Macs. And what you see on the screen might even look very similar, but the software that gets it there is way different. And the value I got from being with those women and hearing what powerless meant to them and how they experienced it and unmanageability and everything else. And I was very fortunate in having that relationship with Don, because Don really is somebody who loved and respected women. And there wouldn't be any women jokes coming out of Don. And matter of fact, his favorite saying was, well, if it's got a motor on it, ask a guy about it. If it's got a feeling attached to it, you better talk to a woman. They understand. And through all that thing, from the grief, through the grief of my fiance dying, everything else, I've been, I got my little posse, my friends without benefits. And it's been a great experience in my life. Have those deep friendships with women without any extras involved. And, you know, it's people, the kittens act different, you know, when the coyote isn't wandering around the yard. And you can... When I become safe, then a different kind of relationship is possible, and some real intimacy is possible. And so I just kept saying over and over again that prayer, God, please teach me about love. And I had that wonderful experience with Linda. I just remember. Where is it here? Here we'll. After she died, I found this in my car. And so it's the last kiss from her. And I thought, when she died, that the prayer had died. Okay, well, you know, you got... Linda told this story about her dad was the alcoholic in her life and how she hated him because he'd taken her to the circus when she was 7 years old and gotten drunk and couldn't find the car. And, you know, she was 7 years old and scared because there's this drunk big guy that's supposed to be protecting her. And she said the part of it was I was so focused on how afraid I'd been that I lost track as sick as my father was, he still took his kid to the circus. And when she passed, I thought, you know, the circus didn't last as long as I wanted it to, but I got to go to the circus. I got to have that beautiful time with her. And she visited me a time or two, and think what you will of her or not, but I was in a special place for us that we both enjoyed, and just heard the voice. She said, Mike, grieve as much as you need to grieve, but understand that I don't need your tears. And I got it. My tears were for me and what I believed I'd lost there, not really for her, not in the way I thought they were. And so I started saying the prayer again. And eventually, I came back from a retreat in Malibu, fabulous retreat, almost as nice as this one. place called Serra Retreat, S-E-R-R-A, right in Malibu Canyon. You look down on Dick Van Dyke's roof and all that stuff there. Interesting aside, they've got in on the wall there the original, all the real estate transactions that went about with that place. And you know, all that beachfront in Malibu on the titling was given away as useless property. No air conditioning in those days, a lot of bugs and mosquitoes down there and everything else. So at one time, Malibu Beach was useless, worthless. Anyway, I come back from there, and these people have been trying to get me to go down to Fly Spec, Indiana, to a little one-day conference down there. I lived in Indiana 40 years, so I can say that. I sent sponsees down there 2 years, and finally I come back, and I don't want to go, but I just don't have a good reason not to go anymore. So I go down there, and it's a one-day deal on Saturday. We go down Friday, and we have a dinner, and who's sitting across from me but my future wife, and I don't know it. And we're in this little German restaurant, and she says, "Could you explain these sausages to me?" And it started there, and it was beautiful, and it all came from a resentment and a bunch of bad behavior that I put in God's hands. This wasn't any magic. But if I put things in God's hands, I can't see where it's going to go. I couldn't predict any of that stuff. But it's still producing, that little prayer is still producing a lot of wonderful stuff to this day. So this is why it's important to have it on the paper, and it's important for me to have this down here, because now when I turn things over to God, I know what I'm really doing. And that's my experience with that little piece of inventory.
Well, I'll take it from here. What? Sir, this is not a question and answer.
He left out my favorite part of why the sponsor fired him about the
podcast. Oh, he did. You got to tell that, Mike.
The last piece of it, when you talked about that you were dating her, sponsoring her son, and playing poker, but then what the sponsor say when he said, "Why I had to let you go?"
Oh, well, he said, "Every time I confront you about your behavior, you explain it to me in such a way that I start to think, well, maybe it is God's will." He says, "I know that's insane, so I can't."
Oh.
Thanks, Charlie.
I'm going to go for probably about 20 minutes. If you need to get up and go to the bathroom, that's totally fine. I'm a huge inventory writing fool, man. And I've heard people say, you know, I see people write too much inventory. I'm like, that's not my experience in AA. I don't see people writing enough inventory. There's magic that happens with pen to paper. And literally, if you do it a lot, it's like any discipline. I've been an athlete all my life. I know the discipline of what's required for me to stay the way I am. I like the way I feel. I like the way I sleep. I like everything about it, right? I don't have these sinking spells and, you know, all of that stuff because I take care of the God dang temple, you know? And you don't have to take care of the temple, but I know the discipline that's required. And Mark told me one time, he said, "Well, Katie, take that discipline into 10 and 11. And once again, who knows what's going to completely change the course of your direction? I don't know. But I know that Lorenz and I have done a ton of inventory. And yeah, you write the same inventory about the same stuff until one day you wake up. And I don't know if it's going to be on the third inventory I wrote on it or on the 33rd inventory I wrote on it. But I'm still going to keep doing the work until I get to where I need to go. And I want to say one thing, since Mike, I love that Mike always talks about his wild sexual activity. I remember the first time I ever heard him, I thought, dang. And he has shown me pictures when he came out of the military, and I wouldn't doubt that you'd get picked up at the bar. And I mean, we were drinking in the 80s, you know, 70s and 80s, and it was, you know, at the end of the night, you girls that are my age know you just look at a guy and go, you'll do, come on, you know. And Charlie said I had a better closing rate than he had, but it's interesting because I just want to touch on this because what Mike said, we live in a different day and age today, and I don't say that lightly. I say that as a warning. Social media is changing the face of the spirit, if you ask me. And you're finding out way too much of what everyone thinks. You're watching way too much of what other people are looking at. I don't do any social media only because it'd make me crazy. I'd be angry. I'd be disappointed I wasn't invited to the party. You know, and I don't care what you're eating for breakfast. You know what I mean? It's just not it. But the pornography is a serious problem. Serious problem. Whatever you put in your mind is what you in and out. And when Mike said about the coyotes, we women know. Well, I can sense if somebody's watching a lot of pornography. You can't be in a conversation with me. You're hollow in your eyes. And that's what God gave women, that instinctual feeling of the creep. And you know, I may like you, but man, you got way too much weirdness going on here. And he gave us that because we're not strong enough to kick your ass, right? So I gotta have that intuition. And I was at the gym one time working out, and an old girlfriend of mine, I hadn't seen her in years, and it's a girlfriend, not an intimate relationship with the woman. It was just my girlfriend. And I ran over there to her to talk to her, and this guy, just out of the blue, walks up, and he goes, oh, my God, I thought you were going to come start making out. I looked at him, I said, buddy, you are watching way too much pornography. And I mean, he went white. Because I thought, who says that? But it's what you put in your mind. You know what I mean? If you put in your mind some, and I'll tell you, it's one click away. The younger generation is getting really twisted. It's heartbreaking to me, if you ask me. I have grandkids, I have grandsons. And, you know, it used to be a little bit more difficult to get. Now it's not. And don't be fooled that the dark side is always working to pull us down. So I'm gonna bust through this. We've been going for 48 minutes. Can I go to like 110 or an hour and 10 minutes, 70 minutes? Okay. So this second surrender, I do like to say, it's easier to get an alcoholic to stop drinking than it is to get one of us to quit playing God. It really, really is. Believe it or not, the not drinking is the easiest part of the recovery process. And some people are like, no, it's not. Yes, it is. Yes, it is. Because once the obsession is gone, you are left with having to look at yourself. Very, very difficult. This is not something we like to do. I'd much rather blame you, look at you, complain about you, razz you, whatever the case may be. And I, you know, remember the third step is going to give us all the many different ways that self shows up. Because once again, AA is, you know, please come share your experience. Please come share your experience. I get what they're saying, but I don't know why that rubs me wrong. Because people misunderstand that I have to have had a divorce to be able to help you. I have to have been a lawyer to be able to help you if you're a lawyer. You know what I mean? Because I'm waiting for somebody that's got my experience so I can relate. And I get where you're going with that, but the truth of the matter is if you understand what the text is saying, everybody has different ways that they show up, right? I am an assertive individual, and there are people that are just stealth, right? They come in a room, you know, they look at you, they're up and out. Nobody ever even saw them. It's like, you didn't see the chick in the red dress? No, I never even saw her because she came in stealth, right? Then you say, did you see Katie? Oh, yeah, we saw her, you know, because it's the presence. So that I could sponsor that girl, but it's the different ways that self shows up. Doesn't make me any more alcoholic or more self-centered than she is. Mine's just more obvious. The ego turned inward is all in their head. On page 60, it says, we were at step 3, and it's italicized. And then over on page 63, it says, we were now at step 3. I believe, and this is my, you know, strictly my opinion, my observation, is that the reason it's italicized in the beginning is because it's getting ready to tell me the many different ways that self shows up. And then the third step prayer is the affirmation of the decision that I am making, that I'm understanding this piece of the work. And then we're getting ready to carry it in, and we're going to find out how Katie is wired. And let me tell you, if you have get an opportunity, do a piece of inventory with Lorenz. It's remarkable. I mean, I'm a huge fan of listening to inventory. I just love it. Somebody calls with the 10th step, and I mean, I get down to causes and conditions. I can get a bead on you. I don't even have to know you. And I mean, I've done inventory with people that I've never even met before, you know, hour and a half on something really big, and you can see the chains just drop. Because my job is to show you where you made decisions based on self that later placed you in a position to be hurt. You're not even aware that you made the decision. It came this quick. Boom, turn. And then when we walk the dog backwards, then we can see and you go, oh my God, I remember having that thought. And then that's where it goes. So that's kind of the deal. So it says, which is that we decide to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understand him. Once again, made no sense to me. What's my will? I mean, really, if you ask most of us in AA, what is my will? I have no idea. This is verbiage I don't get. And remember, my whole history on education, don't ever misunderstand. I am not stupid. I just don't like education. There's two very different things. I was a very successful businesswoman, great mom. I mean, I fit into the world wonderfully, traveled the world for 18 years speaking on marketing with no degree, and I mean, because I'm good. But the problem is I don't understand print. It doesn't make a lot of sense to me. So my will is my thoughts, and my life is my action. Everything is a cause and effect, cause and effect. If you see something, watch, just for the rest of the day, watch when you see something, two people talking, you really think you know what they're saying. Oh, I know he's over there telling her that. Mm-hmm. And then it's going to come back on me. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. We're constantly observing because we are con artists, right? We're manipulators. I like con artists because I kind of think I'm pretty proud of that personally. But, you know, Bill talks about in his story cause and effect, right? He's always talking about cause and effect. He says, I ruthlessly faced my sins and became willing to have my newfound friend take them away, root and branch. Most of us in the program trim the branches off the trees, right? We never get down to the root cause. And that is really, I get worried when people are listening to inventory and it's always like, I got to forgive that person. I have to forgive that person. It's like, nah. Let me do a piece of inventory with you, you know, because most of the time it's not about forgiving them. It's about seeing where I stepped on toes. So if all we're going to talk about is their reaction, then you miss the point. I can promise you I stepped on the toes of my fellows and they retaliated, seeming without provocation, but invariably, which means always, I found that it's sometimes, yeah, there's no wiggle room. That I made a decision based on self that later placed me in a position to be harmed. You know, I mean, I'm telling you what, it's in relationship, it happens all the time. In work, happens all the time. With family, happens all the time. It's just the nature of it. My life is a demonstration of my inward condition. I misunderstood. I thought if I got all this set up out here, I'd feel better. It doesn't work that way. It's an internal condition. So it comes from my insides out. That's why 10 and 11 are so important to understand. If you're walking around angry, scared, all those things, you're actually attracting all that stuff because you're in self-reliance. It doesn't mean, what's the old saying, if you're in fear, you're not in God or whatever. I've never agreed with that. I can tell you what, I can be in fear. Where Charlie and I have a circumstance going on now, I can be in fear. But my 10th step is to redirect. I'm not going to miss that, you know. Then it says, just what do we mean and what do we do? It spends the next two pages explaining that. It says, what do we mean? That's a fair question to ask. And then it switches to what do we do over on page 63. And or actually at the bottom of page 62. So it's getting ready to lay this whole deal out. I think that on 61, where it says the first requirements, Katie's got to be convinced that any life run on self-will can hardly be a success. And we are almost always in collision with somebody or something, even though our motives are good. The key word in there is, if you ask me, is I'm not convinced. My self-reliance works, man. I mean, come on, you guys. It may be a rusty tool, but I typically get what I want, don't I, Charlie? Yes, I do. So I just got to come at it at a different angle this time, and then another angle, right? We women are angle workers, you know? And you guys are like this. Where are we going now? Yeah. And you know, what? Wasn't it in my big fat Greek wedding where she said, the man's the head of the household, but the woman's the neck. She can make the head turn any way it needs to turn. That is so true, so true. But so, you know, I'm not convinced that self-reliance doesn't work for me. It does work for me. So I'll bring God in when I need God. And I did that for a long, long time. Long time. And then it's also switching to a good motive. You see, once again, I know when I'm working an angle for a bad motive. I know that. But when it's a good motive, I'm blinded to it. I'm just a giver. Just trying to be helpful here, man. And everybody's pissed off at me. You know, you do something special for the family to surprise them, and nobody wants to go to Disneyland. And I got the tickets and everything. I don't really like Disneyland, but that was a bad experience. See, and I don't know, I don't know that I have a kind motive until you don't react the way I want you to. This is where it gets really tricky. Now, I use these examples all the time, but trust me, they're much broader. So once again, driving. Oh, my gosh. The driving in this day and age with the cell phones and the, oh, Ben, are you listening, Mr. Look at your cell phone 8,000 times while you're driving. At one point, I told Charlie, I go, dude, you were in the front seat. Was hurling down the road. Then I realized you were looking for a song, weren't you? Or were you answering email? I'm not quite sure where that was going. Yeah, yeah. Now, don't get me wrong. I am a hypocrite. Yeah. I will do it quite as much as he did, but I do it plenty, okay? So I am a hypocrite when it comes to this. And that's the other thing, is the sooner you understand you're a hypocrite, freedom comes. Oh, my God. I mean, that's what the whole fourth step is about, right? The fourth step is about the sick man prayer. God, help me show them the same patience, tolerance, and pity I'd grant a sick friend. They, like myself, are sick, too. I could be either person in this play, right? It's easy. I mean, judgmental. We are so judgmental. But so, you know, in traffic, you know, you let somebody in, right? And you expect this. And in today's day and age, you get very little eye contact, right? You don't get the wave. You don't get anything. And so now I'm pissed off. It's like, oh, I'm just a giver. And then, you know, you hold the door open. I tell you what, I am obsessed with who holds the door open. You know, I swear, I'm in the firearm world. You know, Charlie and I are, you know, shotgun shooters, and we're running with that crowd. I've always been a tomboy, and I love chivalry. I love that when I come into a room, a man will stand up. It's like, God, I love that. Tip his hat. Thank you. My God, I am not equal. Let's call it what it is. But I love when somebody will hold the door. I am really taken in the world. They just swing it open and zip through it. And I mean, I'm 2 feet behind him. How hard would it be to hold it like that? You know what I mean? And it happens a lot at the gym. And so I'm like, wow, you know? And so, but that one is a real big hiccup for me. I'd love to say I'm over it, but I'm not. I watch every time. It's definitely an old idea. I've identified it. Thank you, Mike. I just am, and it's driven by fear, since you've gotten me to look at fear. I never saw fear because I'm the girl that takes a step forward. I'm the one, when you don't hold the door, I'm like, whoa, buddy, or chick, doesn't matter, boy or girl. But see, I don't see that as fear. What I'm afraid of is where we're going with that. What's going to happen to my grandkids? Are we going to be so detached that we have no eye contact, that we have no conversation, that we're going to sit at a table at a restaurant and everyone's going to be on their phone? It scares the crap out of me, guys, if you want to know the truth. I mean, I love that Mike's got a picture from 1968, you know, and every generation loved their generation. The other one is, okay, since we're such givers, right, there's a plastic water bottle on the hike and bike trail. I'm going to pick it up, but when I pick it up, I'm going to go like this. Right? I'm going to be sure everybody knows that I'm a giver. Good intentions, right? I didn't mean to hurt anybody. You can call it good motives, good intentions. You can call it whatever you want to. We are the actor running the whole show. We're forever. That's the word I love the most. We are forever trying to arrange the lights, the ballet, the scenery, and the rest of the players in his own way. Now, here's what's really interesting. If we are forever, some people will say in AA, you know, are you still doing that? You haven't gotten past that yet? I'm like, I don't even get that. You know, what Charlie and I have a real problem with any speaker that comes up and says, I've never had an argument with my wife. I'm like, I'm not going to hear another word they say. Because I don't believe that. Now, it may be true, but I don't believe it. You're not going to ever convince me that if you be alcoholic. Now, something's going on in that house. I personally would like to be invited to observe so I could figure out what it is. Something's going on that ain't right. But, you know, I mean, Charlie and I are the yin and the yang, and there is no yang in Charlie and I. Joe and I, the yin and the yang. It's a whole different deal. One's not better than the other. Don't misunderstand. But, man, we are, you know, elbowing to the hostess table. Who's going to get there first, you know? So when it says that I'm the actor, I'm forever trying to arrange the lights, the ballet scenery, my mind goes 110 miles an hour to figure something out, and Charlie's is too. Well, we got a conflict. I have to write a piece of inventory on Charlie does. He likes to be called, I called him the maintenance man one time at the house. He says, I prefer superintendent. I said, fair enough. I'll give you the superintendent. So he's the superintendent of the house. Now, this was totally different than Joe and I's deal, right? We were raising kids, doing all that. Charlie and I have been together 20 years. Joe and I were together 20 years. And Charlie does everything. He likes to go grocery shop. He does laundry. He's much cleaner than I am. I'm quite a slob. And I am, and I have been, and that's what you're going to get. And so, you know, my shit's spread everywhere. And you know, when Charlie really gets mad in the bathroom, he just takes his arm and just... And when I wake up, I'm like, oh, pushed him over the edge there, didn't I? Encroached a little too much on his sink. Yeah. It's the big slide, he calls it. That shit out of my way. And but he does everything. And he encouraged me to retire early because my business was going to be it was right when social media was becoming kind of the new advertising. And I didn't want to do it. I knew in my heart I don't want to do social media. I knew it right away. Now, don't get me wrong. There's nothing wrong with it if you do it. I just knew for me it wasn't my cup of tea. And so I retire, and oh, my God, have I fallen into retirement nicely. And at one point, I'm sitting in the big old leather lazy boy, and Charlie's over there doing a dish, and he goes, you know, it'd be nice if you'd rinse your dish off. I remember thinking, oh, my God, I've become the man. I am the lazy man in this family. And I write this piece of inventory on it. I call Marty, and I said, Marty, I don't have a role. I don't even know who I am anymore. Charlie does it all. I became that woman that I don't even know what the bills are. This is the girl who did all that for years. And Marty goes, I'm not seeing a downside to this, Katie. I said, I just don't know what my role is. Well, needless to say, I've gotten past that and I'm doing quite well. Charlie takes care of a small village. He does. I also like to say I used to be the sheriff of the world. I really was. I mean, I had the badge. I did what I needed to do. I was the first responder. There, you know, what a small child standing. There's no adult. We're pulling over. Whoa. And when the adult walks up, you're like, what are you thinking? Kid was right at the curb, man. And I mean, I am out of my mind with being the first responder. And this was the piece of inventory that Lorenz did with me that literally changed my life. I had no idea this was going to be the one, but it was amazing. I'm the kind of gal who, if not me, who? The world is in disarray, and we must throw flags on the field everywhere. Right? Right? And I have to be sure that you understand that I see the injustice here. We're in Destin, Florida, we're in the pool, and this pool was packed, it was kids, it was a conference down there, and I look up and it's these condos, and about three, maybe four floors up, this kid is on a chair, gets worse. Hey, it's about, I know, and there's thousands of people around, and this kid's about six, and his sister's about four, he's got her in a headlock on the chair, kind of scaring her about going over the edge. Well, I am from here to you in that black shirt in the pool, and I was like a killer whale. I mean, I just was, can't get there fast enough. And I'm like, Charlie's like, oh, here she goes. And I mean, I come up out of that water, and I look up there, and I go, hey, hey, hey. And that is my signature yell. It gets everybody's attention. And the kid looks at me, and I go, what are you doing? And the kid just lets her go, and they go inside, and this woman comes up to me, and she goes, oh, my God, do you work here? We've been watching this, and it's terrible. And I said, ma'am, I was a school bus driver. I can shut that shit down in a second. And Charlie said he was talking to a woman in the pool, and he said to the woman, he goes, what's she doing? He goes, well, she's deputizing that woman right there. So we're going to have to be leaving. And somebody said, aren't you afraid of the parents coming out? I hope the parents do come out. I said, you can thank me now. I mean, if your kid's standing up in the grocery cart in a store, which makes me nuts, I'm like, hey, 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 sit down. And then when the parent looks at me, I go, it takes a village. I have never, ever, and I'm 64 and done it a lot, had one person take issue with me. You know, we grew up where the neighbors could, you know, tell you what's going on. We were bumming cigarettes in front of the 7-Eleven, and, you know, we're 11. And this guy comes up and goes, where are your parents? I thought, I'm an orphan. I got no parents. You know, that's how it was. I kind of like it, personally. But that's what I'm talking about. And so when I do this piece of inventory with Lorenz, I can't even remember what the injustice was. There were so many. But Lorenz said, once again, remember, I don't see fear because I take a step forward when I get scared, so I just see pissed. And, it, you know, so that's very important piece of this whole storyline. And so Lorenz, you know, in his little methodical way of, well, Katie, what would happen if you took the high road? I know I touched on this last night, but this is really important. And I mean to tell you guys, it was a shock. Never have I taken the high road. I don't even know how to take the high road. I don't even know how to begin. I don't say I'm sorry if I don't think I'm sorry. So there was no high road to ever take. And he said, but what really gets me more than that is, what are you so afraid of? And that's the one that stumped me up. And I thought, I don't know, Mike. I guess, if not me, who? Who's going to fix this injustice in the world? Who's going to be the one that stands on that front line and, you know, is the general? And he said, oh, Katie, there are plenty of people that'll take up the slack. And I did not believe him. And it was not the next weekend we were at a conference. And it was John the Taper was still alive. And I love John. And he, and I'm a guest. Very important part of the story. I'm a guest speaker. You've invited me. So I got to behave a certain way, right? And all of a sudden, the guy reading how it works is, I mean, he can't get the audience. It's like, dude, shut them down, man. They're all talking, and he's trying to read how it works, and I'm getting angrier and angrier and angrier. And this is what I want to do. I want to stand up in there. Sit down. We're having a meeting. That's the guest speaker. And I mean, it was my skin was crawling. It's like, these people, what in the hell? John comes from behind his taping area, and he gets behind that podium, and he goes, people, shut up. We're trying to have a meeting here. And it's like 400 people. And I mean, the room went silent, and I went, oh, my God, I didn't have to do it. Someone else did it. And that was, see, because God's constantly trying to, if you are willing enough to really look, you will begin to have a new pair of glasses that you see things differently. But you have to be able to ask God for the help to not do it. On my, oh, yeah, is there a little white knuckling? Yeah, there is. And what I was telling someone last night is 1 out of 10 times I wouldn't take the high road. Then it was 1 out of 20 times I wouldn't take the high road. And now I just take the high road. And you know what happened that I didn't see coming is I lost my game. So if you and I get in a, go toe-to-toe in an argument, I can't even, my words don't even come out right. I'm like, because I'm no longer good at it. Remember, I was the Ray Donovan of the world. You couldn't, if we're in an argument, I'm winning. And I don't have that game anymore. And one of my sponsees, and then we'll wrap up and take a break. One of my sponsees, because we're telling stories. one of my sponsees was, she is wrapped as tight as me. Oh, she's funny as heck. Got about 30 years sober. She said, well, let me tell you something. I took that stupid high road of yours. This is the message on my machine. I took that stupid high road of yours. There are no good snacks up there in comfy seats at all. And I thought, oh, she's in the early stages of taking the high road. Because let me tell you, man, you all of a sudden you see an injustice, you go, I got no dog in that fight. And I mean, the freedom is incredible. Now, if you're the ego turned inward and you don't speak up, you need to learn how to speak up. And you're going to be as uncomfortable speaking up as I am shutting up. Okay, we'll take a break.